This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
James, were you at Mike Brown's media availability today?
No, I was not.
Okay, good, because he apparently knew nothing. This is not an exaggeration. If you have not seen Mike's media availability, he seems to be unaware that Kevin Herter has been cleared for five-on-five activity. He doesn't know what Kevin Herter has done recently. He doesn't know if he's going to, he says he hasn't even thought. We speculated, hey, Kevin might get in on Thursday. Kevin might get in tomorrow. Mike doesn't know. He hasn't even thought about it.
Said, I don't know. Played with a couple of the coaches one-on-one, I guess. I don't know.
So James, you didn't see it. Mike Brown had a media availability that looked a lot like the Sacramento Kings on the floor yesterday. That's how bad it was. It was a tough day for everybody involved. But Hammer, let's start with the news today. McDaniels in the second round pick, headed to San Antonio. Your partner over on the Kings beat, and big thanks to Sean Cunningham and Fox 40 for the clip of Mike Brown that we just played. Sean says this is probably part one of something, you know, there's a multi-part deal here. There's more to come. I don't think McDaniels had been very good, but a bit surprised that the Kings are sending off another second round pick to San Antonio in this.
Yeah, I think it's more surprising that that they needed to, like, that they couldn't have used him as part of some sort of trade, that some potential trade. Look, you have to understand that the salary cap is one of the most complex things that you're ever going to run into, right? So by all accounts, the Kings were about $1 million underneath the luxury tax of $170.8 million. Which means that they were about, I don't know, $8.2 million underneath the first apron, and the Kings are capped at the first apron. So they cannot go above the first apron. They can't even go above the first apron to sign another player. Like if they run out of players. So this is what happens when you make a sign and trade deal. It caps you at the first apron. So by trading away, because I had this on Twitter, why don't they just waive Jalen McDaniels themselves? If you waive a player, their salary still counts towards your cap. So Jalen was set to make $4.62 or $4.7 million, whatever it is. Like the figure's different everywhere. And by trading that, they now have no responsibility for his salary this season at all, which takes them from, again, a million below the luxury tax of like 170.8. So let's say they were at 169.8 million. Now just knock that down 4.7 million. And so now all of a sudden they're roughly 13 million under the cap. Now, when we think about this, we also have to remember that there is this new rule that you can trade the mid-level exception. You can trade for a player into the mid-level exception as long as his current year salary does not exceed what the exception is. So right now the exception is right around $13 million. The Kings now could go out and acquire a player via trade that fits into that exception. And you could be dealing with a team that, let's say, is way over the luxury tax and is trying to just shave $13 million, or maybe they're over the first apron or over the second apron, and they're just trying to shave 10, 12, $13 million off their cap. You now have enough room to absorb that. Now, I'm not saying that that's what the Kings are going to do, because at this point, I don't know what other move they might have. they could do something simple like use, you know, go out and sign a league minimum player. And so let's say they go out and get Jay Crowder, right? Which I know is a big buzz. Everyone's talking about Jay Crowder today on the internet, just in case Jay Crowder is the guy that the Kings go chase. Jay Crowder, because of his years of service in the NBA, is going to make like $3.4, $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. But in the NBA, for veterans, if you sign them to a minimum contract, a veteran minimum contract for years of service, they don't actually count what their veteran minimum is. They only count as a second year player, which is $2.2 million. So if you were to say sign a guy like that and he makes 3.4, 3.5, 3.6 million, he really only counts 2.2 million towards the cap. So now if you do the math, you saved roughly 3 million in cap space, or 2.5 million over what Jalen McDaniels would have made. And so I know it's weird, and we get into these complicated questions about salary cap. This could just be the Kings saving some money because they don't want to go over the cap and they want to make sure that they're a tax recipient, not a taxpayer. Mm-hmm. But it could also either open up the MLE, or it could open them up to go sign another veteran, but at a much more affordable price than Jalen McDaniels, $4.7 million.
That's a lot there. So great job, Tom.
I didn't know that about the vet minimum, though.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Great job
by him there.
It's a way. Do they do that to not like let older players get squeezed out to where someone would just say, well, it's cheaper to sign, you know, a second year guy who's moving around versus a veteran. It's a way to keep veterans in the league, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So again, look at Alex Len, for example, for this season. And I think Alex Len, the Kings are on the hook for roughly, I want to see, it's 3 point, I've got it right here. Alex Len, 3.3 million. So Alex Len only counts 2.2 million. So on, for luxury tax purposes and for salary cap purposes, it's you save about $900,000 there. But you could see how Jalen McDaniels at 4.7, if you're able to get rid of his contract and then bring in another veteran and he only counts 2.2 million, now you're talking about 2.5 million that you've kind of cleared, and now you can use that for, you know, realistically you could use that for up to two like first year rookie scale contracts.
So one of the things I'm thinking when I think about the next move potentially, or it gives you an opportunity to be able to make a move, is what we're learning here, is like what do you think this Kings team would be looking for in that respect? Would it be another wing defender? Is it a bench guy? Is it another starter? Like what would you kind of be looking to use that money for? Or that space.
I think it's interesting because, we've already seen that, you know, they have a lack of depth at the wing. And I think we all kind of considered Jalen McDaniels part of like the back end of the rotation. He's like the 9, 9.5, 10 man of the rotation. Clearly that wasn't the plan. And like, look, I don't know if it's because Jalen McDaniels didn't play particularly well in the preseason, or if it's that some of the young players have impressed them more, there is that potential. But also look at his roster spot. His roster spot means something. So like right now, if we were to finish this whole thing up, like maybe Boogie Ellis doesn't make the roster, and then you could lose Boogie Ellis. But now because you've opened up another roster spot, let's say that you've completely fallen in love with Isaac Jones, and you want to give Isaac Jones a regular roster spot at a rookie scale, but you need that roster spot. So now you can sign him. And you know, again, he's not going to make anything. His first year salary is going to be like $1.2 million, something like that. It would be a substantial raise from the $500,000 that he's making as a two-way player. And then on top of that, you could then transfer Boogie Ellis's Exhibit 10 contract into a two-way contract. Mm-hmm. So I think the roster spot is valuable here. But let's also look at that. I mean, there's potential here for the Kings to do something crazy where they take on more than one player. There's potential for them to, like I saw someone in the chat say, well, I guess this means they're not going to go trade for a player like Kyle Kuzma. Maybe they're not going to go trade for a guy like Kyle Kuzma, but it's also possible that you went to a team like Washington and say, hey, what can we work out here? And they said, well, we'll take back Herter, but we don't want to take any more contract because we don't want to be higher on our salary either. So you could do this move and move off of a piece right now and then free up enough cap space that you could make a true trade and still stay under that first apron, which is always going to be the problem here.
Hammer, what do you think of this, the non-starter group that we've seen over the course of these first three preseason games, the guys like Isaac Jones, Mason Jones, Kobe Jones, guys whose last name isn't Jones, Isaiah Crawford,
Ellis,
like,
guys, yeah.
Yeah, the other guys in this group that aren't the starting five or, you know, throw Malik in there, the rotational guys. What do you think of them so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult, right? Because I said this at the beginning of camp, and I think a lot of people, I think people think I'm throwing shade at the younger players, and I'm not. And then on top of that, they think I'm throwing shade at, like, the Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox, and I'm not. Like, the Kings didn't know walking into camp that, well, maybe they did walking into camp, but, like, 2 weeks before camp, they didn't know that Trey Lyles was going to miss significant time with a groin injury. They didn't know that Jordan McLaughlin was going to miss, 3 weeks with a grade 2 ankle sprain. They knew about Herter and they knew about Devin Carter, but then, again, Orlando Robinson hurts himself and now you're down another body. And I keep bringing this up, but I think what we're seeing early in preseason is a team that I think everybody's playing hard and I think everyone's learning and doing the things that they're supposed to do in camp. But there's a big difference between the starting five going up against the young players that they are today versus what they would have if Trey Lyles, Kevin Herter, Jordan McLaughlin would have been healthy. And so when you get into a game against the Golden State Warriors, against the Portland Trailblazers, and you haven't really played against NBA veteran players, that's going to be a problem. And I think that's what we're seeing, sort of like the physicality adjustment that the Kings didn't make against Portland. Okay. I mean, the last thing that, Isaac Jones wants to do is to play out of his mind so hard in a training camp session that he injures Domantas Sabonis and is the guy that hurt Domantas Sabonis and cost the Kings a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you have this young player learning how to play, but then also being forced sort of into action that they aren't really ready for. And it's a good thing because they're learning and they're getting more on the job training. Mm-hmm. But for the veterans, again, you go back to last season when De'Aaron Fox was battling Davion Mitchell every single day in training camp and Chris Duarte was there fighting it out. Keon Ellis was fighting it out for roster spots or playing time. And just go down the list of people that were healthy in camp last year. I mean, Trey Lyles doesn't get hurt until the last week. And, so all of those people, even a JaVale McGee is there in camp with Alex Lynn and with Domantas Sabonis. So it's a big difference when that's who you're going up against versus, some of the young guys that the Kings are going up against this year. And again, this isn't a slight on them. It's about experience. It's about them. And it's also about the Kings not having an extra five roster spots to go out and bring in some veterans to play for camp, hoping that, that you'll give your starter some different competition. So it's a little different.
Is there anything that can be done about that? Obviously it's just the injuries and, you make some roster moves to maybe bring some guys in like a Jay Crowder or something like that. But it's almost one of those things where you just got to deal with it and hope that your team is prepared once the season starts for that level of physicality. That's about all you can do, huh?
My internet died and I just came back. I missed whatever question you asked. Like, I can start talking here, but I have no idea what you just asked.
Yeah, no, I just basically asked, there's nothing Mike Brown and the staff can really do about that, because the guys that are there are that you want on your roster, like your Trey Lyles and your Kevin Herter, they're hurt, and you're not going to go out and just sign veterans. And so you just got to kind of hope that they're ready for the start of the season, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's a bad situation to be in, but it's okay. I mean, like, look, last season, we can even expand it. Like, look at the players that the Kings had at camp last year. They had Jalen Noel in camp. They had Deontay Burton, and they had Chance Comanche, and all of those guys had NBA experience. They had all played in the league. So, like, this year, when you're looking at even a guy like Colby Jones, he doesn't have enough experience in the league for us to give him like that moniker of like he's a seasoned player, you know. So, and then add on to that the Isaac Jones, Isaiah Crawford, Bogey Ellis, and again, these guys can play really, really well. But there's a difference between playing really well and understanding what you're doing on the court. You know, we talked about this, the Willie Cauley-Stein thought, where like it took him a year before he understood that when a coach is telling him to run to this spot on the floor, that why he was running to that spot on the floor. Well, the Kings have a bunch of those guys right now, and some of them, you know, maybe they pick up on it way quicker and you're able to elevate them. But at the same time, like, look, Jalen McDaniels did not look like he was going to be a huge part of what they're doing. We've seen guys again, like Isaiah Crawford seemed to, you know, step up and be able to fill in some of these minutes that he was playing, or an Isaac Jones. And not only that, but if a player's not going to be part of what you're doing and he's pushing you over the luxury tax or stopping you from being able to make a trade with like your full mid-level exception, then that's a pretty substantial deal. And like, look, I keep bringing up this whole mid-level thing. Like, there's a guy like Robert Williams in Portland who clearly is not part of their plan. I mean, we watched DeAndre Ayton and we watched Klingon. Klingon is huge. Yeah. Just so, like, in real life, like, Klingon made Alex Len look small. Like, that is a gigantic dude. I mean, I think he's 7'3", and I think we, like, at the college level, he looked big, but then he goes up against Zach Edey and he looks like a little, you know, like, way smaller. In person, that is a tremendously giant dude. But like, where is Robert Williams going to play? A guy like Jared Vanderbilt down with the Lakers. Would the Lakers value cap relief over over, you know, the having him on the roster? Maybe. And so these are things that I'm, you know, kind of bringing up, because I think that there is potential to go out and add, not Kyle Kuzma. I mean, there might be a way to go add Kyle Kuzma, but you're not going to be able to add a major like rotational piece that maybe plays defense at a high level. And this team looks to me, they don't just have like a depth issue at the four. I think they have a depth issue at the five as well. Just because, you know, you're counting on Trey Lyles to kind of be your third and he's not healthy. But you know, Alex Len, unfortunately, has had a history of injury throughout his career. Domantas Sabonis plays 33 to 35 minutes a game every single night. And so if you have a situation where someone gets hurt there, I mean, is Orlando Robinson a guy that you can trust to step on the floor after missing, you know, a month, month and a half, whatever it's going to be that he's going to miss? And can he step on the floor and actually be a player for you? Or would you be better off finding like a 4-5 combo guy out there on the market and see if you can bring him in?
What did you think of Jordan McLaughlin's debut yesterday?
I thought he looked really smooth. I thought he looked really good. You know, like, I think, you know, like, you shouldn't expect him to be out there for 25 minutes a game or anything. But I think, like, I told Sean Cunningham during the game, he reminded me a little bit of Corey Joseph. And, you know, like, again, Corey Joseph knew exactly how to play the game of basketball. He knew where to be on the floor at all times. Was he a good fit for the team because he's not like a super fast point guard? No, I didn't think he was a great fit, but I think Jordan plays the game at a better speed. And, you know, he's versatile, can play the one and the two. And, you know, we talked to him after the game and he mentioned that even dating back to his high school and college days, he's always played in a system with multiple ball handlers where, you know, if he's playing off ball, that's okay because he's used to that. He's used to being on a team with one, two, three point guards that are all playing and kind of, you know, you're never on the court by yourself as the only guy who can set everybody up. And so he kind of feels like he'll fit well.
Yeah. I like his game. I like the fact that he knows his role. He knows who he is as a player. And also the fact that he can shoot the ball really well. And we've seen earlier in this preseason, you know, Kings need to make sure they got as many shooters out there on the floor as possible for what they're trying to do on the offensive end. Do you think that Jordan is going to have a consistent role in the rotation, or is it going to be situational like we kind of talk about with Alex Len or and Trey Lyles or something? Well, Trey Lyles is going to play all the time, but where he plays may depend on the matchups. Do you think Jordan is going to fall into that role?
Yeah, I kind of want to see what the Kings do here at, you know, down to the wire here, whether they do go out and make some other move. Again, I don't know what that other move could be, whether it be like signing a Jay Crowder or using your MLE or going out and trading for a bigger player. I don't know what the idea is there, but I think that could realistically, it could affect what happens with Jordan, because as of right now, you know, Keon Ellis is going to play substantial minutes, whether it's a starter or off the bench. You know, De'Aaron Fox is going to play 35 minutes tonight. I think Malik Monk is in line for closer to 30 minutes a game this year. DeMar DeRozan doesn't step off the court at the three. And then you've got this Kevin Huerter situation that you don't know where he's going to play. And saying all of that, I still think that the Kings want Keegan Murray to play the three a bunch. Hmm. And so you have like all of these pieces, and it's very likely that the Kings have like a very tight 8-man group. And then that ninth man or ninth and a half man that I always talk about, is probably going to go to a guy like Jordan or a guy like Alex Len. And it's going to depend on the night who's going to play more. And that's unless the Kings go out and get somebody here that changes the dynamic of their team.
What the hell happened to Colby Jones?
I don't know. You know, like Kyle and I talked about like the Mason Jones situation too earlier. And I kind of put Mason Jones and Colby Jones in sort of the same kind of boat where, you know, I think it's easier as a young player to walk into the league if you have a very defined role. And I don't mean a defined role as in you're going to play like 12 to 15 minutes and you're going to go in the second quarter. I mean, as in Keon Ellis walks on the court, he shoots threes, he plays defense. That's his role. He moves to the open spot. He's not asked to handle the ball all that much. He's asked to go hit the crash zone, but who he is as a player doesn't change. And when you have these jack of all trades types of guys who come in and can do maybe a little bit more, I think doing a little bit more sometimes hurts you, because I don't think they're going to be asked to do any of that extra stuff that they have in their game. And so it kind of puts him in a weird position. And again, like look at the 3-point shots that Boogie Ellis has made. And it's because Boogie Ellis like understands for him to get on the court, he needs to hit the open three and he needs to play defense. Mm-hmm. And so all of his threes, I think, you know, the first two games he played, he was something like 6 of 11 from three. All of them were in rhythm and on target and looked like the right shot. Where even the threes that Mason Jones took were off the dribble. One of them was a bank shot three that went in. And so, like, it doesn't matter whether it goes in or not. You always have to think to yourself, is he doing what you would want from a role player? And I think a lot of the time the answer is not really. He's doing what Malik Monk might do, but you're not Malik Monk. Malik Monk is Malik Monk, and he's here, and he's going to play substantial minutes. So I think it's kind of hard for these types of guys to find their way and break into a rotation unless you have a major injury and they have to play like these jack of all trades type of roles. And so, yeah, I would like to tell you that there's a clear answer, but you know, I've covered this team forever. And if I were to tell you all of the draft picks that didn't work out, we would go into year 102.5 hours.
Oh, well.
You know, and I'm not saying he's not going to work out at all. I'm saying as of right now, you know, he's more in line with, you know, name like, a guy like Tyler Honeycutt, or a guy like Hassan Whiteside the first time around, or, you know, like name that second round pick of Frank Mason, you know, guys that just didn't make it in the.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
League, and that happens a lot of the time with the second round pick, which is why I think the Kings keep giving them away like their Halloween candy.
Well,
they just
your boy.
This is just confusing.
Michael Scotto, he reports that the Spurs are trading a 2025 second round pick via the Chicago Bulls that is top 55 protected.
Bro, I didn't know we had protections after the lottery.
To the Sacramento Kings in the Jalen McDaniels trade. So we do, in fact, get a second round pick from, of course, it's top 55 protected. So.
Okay. Wait, so okay. I can't explain what those are. Just so, because second round picks, you can protect in weird ways. So one second round pick, you can trade like four times. You can have it be like protected, you know, top 55 protected. It can be 40 through 54 protected. Like it can go to different places and then the protections just go away. And so it is an asset, but it's an asset that doesn't mean very much in a deal.
Top 55 protected. So that's like the middle of the second round?
No, it's the end. There's 60 picks. Oh,
there's 60. It's the end. Yeah.
So let's dig into this a little further. As others have reported, McDaniels will be waived, and the Kings send a 2031.
Oh, boy.
Unprotected second round pick and cash to the San Antonio Spurs.
We don't have any picks that would actually. That's the other thing that's crazy about that 2031. It's a pick swap.
We'll come back. We'll talk more with James Hamm. We'll talk a little bit about the ugliness that took place at the Golden 1 Center yesterday and what we expect to see from Mike Brown and the Sacramento Kings tomorrow and again on Thursday as preseason wraps up here this week with D'Lo and Casey on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. All right, we've gone over the different things that the Kings have done today, why they did it, what it might mean, what they may do in the future, what they could use, what they could need, some shortcomings for the non-rotational players, or at least the players we expect to be non-rotational players. You got that look on your face. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to address
Nick
something.
Nick Sirianni over there with that stupid look on your face. Go ahead.
Just start yelling at Jesse. Charlie walks by, start yelling at him.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do our due diligence because, you know, we always looking out for the people, make sure everything's taken care of. I didn't see this, but I've been alerted. Shams was on ESPN today talking about De'Aaron not resigning and all this other stuff. It's first of all, it already happened like almost a year ago.
Yeah.
And we already said what it was. And Ham, you can break down like it, or you and all three of us can break down. This is par for the course.
It's not
makes
news.
No sense. Yeah, but people keep.
He's on a new network and times are slow, so he had to have a story for them, and so he's talking about De'Aaron not signing the contract extension that he didn't sign 6 months ago.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like 4 or 5 months ago that this actually, while he was at the Athletic, they put this story out there. But all this means,
and it wasn't news then, by the way.
No.
It wasn't news then. It's not news today.
No. And like, look, De'Aaron Fox has 2 years left on his deal. He has this year and he has next year. And per NBA rules, you can negotiate a contract, and you basically, as a player like Fox, who is a very good, like, you can have, you can be under contract with your current team for 5 years at a time. If he gets that next step, if he makes all NBA again, and next summer, he's now eligible for a sixth year, right? So what that means is not only does his salary go from like 30% of the salary cap to 35%, but then next summer, he would have 1 year left on his deal, and then he could sign a five-year extension. Mm-hmm. Even next summer, if he doesn't make all NBA, the most he can sign is a four-year extension onto his current deal and be under contract for 5 years. If he does make All-NBA, it's not just that you get 5% more. It's that that 5% more compounded over 6 years as opposed to 5 years becomes like this astronomical number when you're like 32 years old. It's like $70 million for 1 year. And so that's where his potential earnings go from. I think right now he can sign a 3 year, like $165 million extension. Mm-hmm. If he waits till this summer, makes all NBA, it's a 5 year, $335 million deal. So it's like twice as much money. So like De'Aaron Fox is doing exactly what De'Aaron Fox should be doing as a player who made all NBA 1 year and then didn't make it the next, but was still probably a little bit remote, reasonably close. If he's an All-NBA player this year, it means not only a whole lot more money up front, but a whole lot more money in the final year of his deal, which would be, again, right now he's 26, he'll be 27 in December. But so let's say he signs his deal next year where he's, you know, 27, will be 28. And then he's got six more years, 5 years, his 28-year season, but 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. Mm-hmm. So his 33-year season, he'll make 70-plus million bucks.
Yeah, I mean, Hammer laid it out perfectly. But, you know, they're just in case there were some people that are new to the show or new to the whole Kings family here, like, nothing to see here. Nothing to see.
Nothing at all.
And it's nothing until it is.
And it won't be until next offseason, right? Because you're not going to go into a – no one, De'Aaron included, wants to go into the final year of his contract. So if he misses out on All-NBA, he's got a decision to make, right? If he misses out on All-NBA this year, obviously the Kings don't want to enter a situation where he's in the final year of his contract, and I'm confident – Rich Paul and De'Aaron Fox don't want to enter into a situation where he's in the final year of his contract, but he's clearly playing for something. And as you just laid out those numbers there a second ago, Hammer, it's he's playing for a lot. That's a big money shift.
What is it, like 125 compared to potentially like 325 or something like that?
It's like a $170 million difference. So, and it's not that he won't get still paid at 33, that 33-year-old season. He just won't make as much, most likely. I mean, you would think so. And I see like Drew Down in the chat and Kyle Renato. One says that Andre Iguodala says Fox might want out. And Bart Scott says he's unhappy. it's great. Look, none of this and none of it matters until Fox is ready to, like, until next offseason. And even then, he might still sign the contract and then think about it afterwards, like a year later, say, okay, hey, we gave it a run here. And, you know, DeMar DeRozan's now gone. And I don't know what you guys want from me, but, like, we haven't reached the mountaintop. So, yeah. Yep.
That's all more fun than talking about what happened yesterday.
Oh yeah.
Didn't like that.
You got to witness that ridiculousness firsthand. Mike was asked about sluggish legs and being tired. What the hell was that?
Again, I think this does play into a little bit of the just like being ready and being ready in camp. And like, look, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Like, it's preseason. It was disappointing for sure to watch I think some of the things that were disappointing, like, right, the 9 turnovers in the first quarter and 27 for the game. That means that your starting unit, including, I think Sabonis had 3 turnovers, Fox had 2, and DeMar DeRozan had 2 turnovers in the first quarter. Like, that's not smart. That's not good basketball. I also think they ran around and just committed a bunch of fouls, and Fox got very frustrated, like he has, you know, we've seen him get frustrated in the past, but like, there's not going to be a game during the regular season where De'Aaron Fox has 5 first half fouls. And, you know, I don't know if it was something that they were doing wrong, or it was just it, for me, Portland was a more physical team. They came in and pushed the Kings around a little bit. I think the biggest concern is that this team didn't take Portland or Washington or Charlotte or Detroit serious last year, and they got bowled over like this. And so it, as people who covered last season and were and talked about on the radio, our instant reaction is to go like, well, this is deja vu. You know, like, we've seen this act. So that's one thing. But look, again, it's preseason. You're just starting to get players back. You had decided to use Isaiah Crawford in your rotation, which, again, he's a young player who's still learning the ropes. Like, there were a lot of things that were going on that they were trying. And sometimes, you know, it's back to the drawing board a little bit and work on the finer nuances of what you're trying to do on the court.
And Ham, look, they got to be professionals out there. You got things that you're trying to work on or whatever, but I know it's only the 3rd preseason game, but there might be an element for some of these guys where it's like, all right, we know this game doesn't matter. No matter what we do, like, it's mentally, emotionally, maybe it's hard to get up for the 3rd preseason game of the season Sunday afternoon. I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but I also, it is also a real thing, because like, it could have been the exact opposite yesterday, and they looked fantastic. It doesn't go towards their 2024, 2025 record, and none of that will matter next Thursday. So, you know, you may have some guys that just don't have the same level of focus going into another preseason game at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that can very well be it. But what I don't want to hear is, you know, 5 games into the regular season, well, we're still trying to learn each other, we're still trying to get everything down. And then 10 games into the regular season, yeah, you know, if you're 4-6 and you're not playing well and we're sitting here wondering what happened, you can start going back to preseason and looking and saying, hey, look, they really didn't look good then. If, you know, when the lights turn on and season, you know, starts, they look like world beaters, then none of this matters. If they don't, if this sort of malaise is, you know, not being able to finish games and not playing all that well, if it carries over, then it will be a problem. And so you're hoping that this is just a phase and that it's just preseason. But again, you know, they
but
need
Hammer,
to show
isn't
that
it already carrying over? Like, isn't some of this stuff, like, I mean, it's not fair. I get that. But losing to teams that we perceive to be bad, like they did that last year, they did it yesterday. Having trouble defending the 3-point shot, having trouble defending the perimeter. That's something that they did last year that we're seeing this year. Isn't it fair to feel like this is something maybe carrying over a little bit from last year that hasn't been corrected?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, right? I would say like some of the 3-point stuff did get corrected in the last, you know, 25 games of the season where they're actually really good defending the 3. I think the physicality, matching physicality, the Kings were one of the most physical teams in the last half of the season. So I think maybe it's where you're starting from. You know, again, like when you reset and you start over every season, you hope that you're building on the last, right? But are you building on the early part of last season? Are you building on the last part of last season? What are you building on? And again, throw in all these other like moving pieces that we have where, again, you're going up against young players who really don't know anything about what's happening during training camp. Mm-hmm. And that's who you're competing with. And so I think there are a lot of things that are like that are in play right now, but I'm not going to worry about them until, again, we get 10 games into the season and they look flat and they look lethargic and they look like they aren't ready to compete. If that's the case, then we have to start having like really, really serious talks. And as for right now, it's kind of like the excitement of getting DeMar DeRozan and all that stuff. Like, how long does that carry you? And like, we've seen the sellouts in preseason already. But like, what does that mean in game 33 of the regular season? Is that still a thing? Or are you just a good team? Or are you just a mediocre team? You got to figure it out. And I kind of want to see where they are at all of these stages before we start like panicking about a preseason game.
Yeah, I'm at the same boat. And like you said, I'm going to even, and maybe it's too much leeway, but I'll give them, you know, 12, 15 games into the regular season to see if things have changed with their perimeter defense. The shooting wise, which is anemic in itself, the 3-point shooting, I still look at that as the number one. It'll just balance out at some point. Like, it's at some point they'll be shooting a normal percentage from beyond the arc, but you also are missing two of your best 3-point shooters as well. But I'll ask you, if you have to choose between one of the issues, the 3-point shooting or defending the 3-point shot, which one are you more concerned about potentially, or do you have your eye on more?
Defense is always work in progress. The thing that has me more concerned, it's not just that they aren't hitting threes, is that they aren't taking threes. And that to me is a big deal. So, I mean, I'd like to tell you that all that works out in the end and that they'll be just fine. But the modern NBA, you need to be able to hit 12, 13, 14, sometimes 15 threes in a game is like sort of your medium game, you know, and have games where you go up to 24 made threes in a game. Like, this team needs to shoot more threes. And I'd even point out, like, a lot of the threes that they have taken are by players who aren't going to play very much, if at all. You know, like we talked about the first two games, how many threes did they take? How many threes did they hit in the first two games? And Boogie Ellis hit a bunch of them. And I'd like to tell you that Boogie Ellis is going to be there hoisting threes all season long, but that's probably not the case. Just because, you know, where is his spot in the rotation if he even makes a team? Is he on a two-way contract? Like, there's a good chance of Boogie Ellis wins the entire season in Stockton. So I think there has to be some sort of concern here that their offense isn't at a point yet where they're really looking for that 3-point shot. And it's just such a prevalent part of the game. That, you know, again, you will not win games where you get outscored by 60 points from behind the arc, which is what happened against Golden State Warriors in the first game. You aren't going to. I mean, the Kings should have been up on the Warriors by 15 at half. Their offense was scoring at the basket all night long. But the fact is, they'd given up 15 makes in the first half, and that's why that game was close at all. Even if you gave up 15 layups, that's still, again, 15 less points that would have been scored against you. And so you can see what I'm talking about, how they could have easily been up on that team a lot more than they were, and they weren't able to like really do anything that would show you that they are going to hit a bunch of threes during the season. So, yeah, I mean, part of it is just the flow offense. Part of it's that they're learning new pieces and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to hit those shots. They're in order for this thing to work, they're going to have to hit threes like everybody else does in the league.
And I'm just looking at the box score last night, you know, the worst game by far. And you brought up a good point, James, about the taking the threes. Keegan Murray only took one. There was no Trey Lyles or Kevin Huerter. I could make the argument between the three of those guys, they each take three threes. That's nine. Now you're up from 29 to 37 3-point attempts, probably making at least two or three of those. You get to, you know what I mean? Like, what we saw last night and what we've seen in the first two games specifically, I think, isn't the norm when this team is healthy. And then, like I said, Keegan Murray, he took 10 field goal attempts last night, only one three. That kind of sounds to me like he's working on stuff. Like, you've been working on things in the offseason, your post game, your mid range. This is an opportunity to get a feel for it. We get into a regular game situation, you're going to be putting up 5-6 threes in a game. That's what that says to me.
No, I get you. But here's some other crazy stats that when I was watching, we talked about earlier with Kyle on the Insiders, like the Kings scored 85 points last night, right? Mm-hmm. And of those 85 points, 32 of them came on fast breaks. So realistically, they only scored 53 points in the half court, and that's including free throws, right? So you look at their field goal percentage was horrible. Well, it's not great, 41.7 for the game. But again, the fast break points, they hit 15 of 19. So let's back those out. So now you're shooting 20 of 65 from the field in non-fast break opportunities. That's not good. That means your offense is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. And that was with the starters playing substantial minutes. So to me, that's a problem. We're not going to see games at the NBA level, at least I don't think, where you're seeing the Kings score 30 plus multiple nights. And like their last two games, they scored over 30 points on fast breaks, unless we're doing the whole, you know, four guys playing defense, one playing offense, that, you know, the old cherry picking move that they were rumored to be instituting years ago under Michael.
Allegedly.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying, though. Like, that's how they're getting a lot of their points. And I think it's really masking the fact that they aren't playing that well on the offensive end at all right now, which is something they need to clean up. They need to figure out.
Point of reference, they took 46 threes the other night on Friday.
Mm.
So
the Kings did?
Yeah.
And hit, what, 27%?
Yeah, they were 28%. 13 of 46 the other night.
Yeah, yeah.
But just,
they've
just
got to take that many. Yeah. They do. Yeah.
Mm.
And right. While we're here, only 27 the first time. So,
yeah,
but right. I think what Ham is talking about, he made
that
a
was
good
like
point.
5 of 26. It was something awful. Oh no, yeah.
What Ham?
Yeah, they averaged 39 a game last season.
What Ham? The point that he made was really spot on. I thought, with all these guys, these Stockton King guys, you're not, you know, maybe they're not as comfortable in that offense, shooting a three or trying to do other things like crash the basket and. You know, they're not in the flow of being able to let that 3-pointer fly the same way. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I like, look, this is a work in progress. It's early, and they have changed a lot of their principles. They've changed a lot of what they're doing. Again, Domantas Sabonis finally took the 3-point shots that Mike was saying he's going to take, and he hasn't hit one yet. He's 0-for-6 in the last two games. That's okay. Keep shooting them, because I don't think there's anything wrong with the threes he has been taking. You know, Keon Ellis is, again, he hasn't hit his 3-point shots. That's not a big deal. Keegan Murray has not hit his 3-point shots at all. So when those guys are hitting their 3-point shots, you kind of feel like they might start feeding the beast there and making sure they get more shots. But it's early in preseason. And you know, again, I don't think there's any reason to panic, even if they don't look great in the next two games, which they have a week to figure it out after that. And so there should be a lot of, you know, not only will they have a week, but they'll have a week and at least Kevin Huerter and McLaughlin will be back in the fold where they're practicing with those guys every day. And you'll have more of a, you know, veteran feel to camp.
Well, will someone please tell Mike what's going on with Kevin Huerter? In fact, James, when we wrap up here in a minute, I need you to call Mike. And like, Mike, your team sent us a press release that said Kevin Huerter is cleared for 4-on-4. Now, I'm looking at the email, and I see that you're not on the list. And I'm sorry that they didn't email this to you. But Kevin's good. He can start practicing as soon as right this second.
Mike said, I don't
he already know. Has done 1v1. Like, he probably
well, he
did
told
2v2,
us that.
Maybe
Mike
more.
Wasn't yeah. sure that had happened, but he did tell us, I don't know. I think he was playing 1-on-1 with James Hamm yesterday. I have no idea.
No, it wasn't there. Me. It wasn't the Battle of the Gingers.
out there getting shots up. What are we doing next? Jesse, are we running it back?
Baseball.
Baseball. We're headed out to baseball. All right. What team is that that's playing tonight, Casey?
The Yankees are playing tonight.
And?
The Guardians. The
Yankees and the Guardians. Tonight, we've got coverage of that here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. We'll be back tomorrow. Begin at 10 a.m. with the Insiders as we get ready for the Kings' next preseason game against the Utah Jazz. Baseball next here on ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Yankees.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.